What a week it has been in politics. For starters, the stunning sudden downfall of a governor. Also, another campaign casualty brought down by her remarks about race, and two big states still trying to figure out how to make their primaries count. So to make sense of what's happened, we've brought in two of our regular political commentators, Ruth Marcus of The Washington Post. Hi, Ruth.
Hi there.
And Matthew Continetti of The Weekly Standard. Matthew, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And of course, the big story this week, the resignation of New York's Democratic Governor Eliot Spitzer following the news of his involvement in a prostitution ring. And I think never has the word schadenfreude gotten a bigger workout in the pages of papers than it has this week, Ruth.
I was told it needed to be capitalized by a German scholar who emailed me because I couldn't resist it. There were a lot of people who were very happy, who had been, as they perceived it, the victims of his aggressive prosecutorial style or the victims of his aggressive political style, who did enjoy a little thrill of pleasure. I was not among them. I just think it's a terrible, tragic story, a very controversial and very ambitious, but also very capable and smart politician who was felled by his own faults, but I don't take any joy in it.
Matt, how do you account for the fact that a prosecutor who's been involved in prosecuting cases just like this one, maybe not just like this one, but very similar, and should know about the many ways that these things can be traced, seem to think it couldn't happen to him?
That's what's most fascinating to me about this whole thing. I usually avoid dime store psychologizing, but let's do it anyway. It's amazing to me the level of self-delusion that he was capable of. And this is a man who I think had designs on the presidency of the United States, even as he was committing these alleged crimes and conducting affairs with prostitutes. You know, we always talk about political egos and the type of, you know, self-possession or ambition that's necessary for someone to rise to the heights in American politics. But rarely do we see such a clear-cut example of it as in Spitzer's downfall.
Let's talk about now the downfall of Geraldine Ferraro, who had to step down from an honorary position on Hillary Clinton's finance committee after she refused to back away from some comments that she had made in which she said that Barack Obama would not be where he is today if he were white. Ruth Marcus, do you see this having any lasting impact on the campaigns?
I think it's illustrative of two things: our real discomfort with talking about race in particular, but also to some extent gender. I think it's going to be, as things go forward, perhaps more of a subject to be talked about rather than less, as things, as they seem to be getting nastier. And I just like to point out that Geraldine Ferraro violated what I think of as Ruth's rules of political rhetoric. One is, don't make a Holocaust analogy. And the second is, don't invoke race or gender unless it's yours. And even then, you should probably think twice about it.
Matthew Continetti, what do you think? Does this spill over in any extended way into the political campaign?
And the larger story here is the manners in which people are allowed to critique Barack Obama's candidacy. Obama himself in the past has said that it is his face that he'd be offering to the world as a way to heal the wounds, repair the broken world. This is the rhetoric he uses. His identity in many ways is central to his candidacy. However, when others bring up Obama's identity, they need to be very careful, because raising the issue often allows the Obama campaign to counterattack and say that that is out of bounds.
I want to end by talking about the primaries in Florida and Michigan, the Democrats in both those states working to figure out some kind of do-over to get those delegates included at the Democratic National Convention. Ruth Marcus, do you think there will be a resolution, or will people just say, forget it, Florida and Michigan, you're out?
I think there will be a resolution, but it's partly because I believe there has to be a resolution. They seem to be getting closer in Michigan, and I think that as Michigan goes, so goes Florida. The alternative, which is either to count votes that are not a fair representation of a real contested primary, or to disenfranchise these voters, both of them are very bad ideas. So therefore, you just shouldn't let the perfect electoral system here be the enemy of an adequate substitute.
But to find that adequate substitute, Matt, it doesn't seem like there's a lot of consensus between the campaigns, the Democratic National Committee, the Democratic parties in these states of how to go about this.
Right. It's politics. There will be a resolution, though, for the simple fact that the last time that there were 48 states represented at the Democratic Convention in 1956, there were only 48 states in the Union. But let's be be clear about what is at stake here. I'm not sure it's enfranchisement as much as legitimacy. And so if Obama becomes a nominee without seating these delegations, then his legitimacy as the nominee, even though he leads among pledged delegates and in the popular vote, I think would be weakened, and the Clinton campaign would make sure of that. On the other hand, Clinton, if she is to take the nomination lacking a popular mandate and lacking a pledged delegate mandate, but using the superdelegates, she will need to be able to say, look, I'm the legitimate nominee because I've won these key big states such as Florida and Michigan. This is really a battle about the legitimacy of whomever will be the Democratic nominee in August.
Okay, we'll have to leave it there. Matthew Continetti of the Weekly Standard, Ruth Marcus of the Washington Post. Thanks to you both for coming in.
Thanks for having me.